This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A teenager today has a lot more to worry about than when I was in high school too many years ago. It's such a different world that it's impossible for me to imagine what it's like. I didn't have to worry about the distinguishing between my cyber identity and my real life identity. And for many young people today, these two selves are the same. That's why cyber attacks, insults, degrading comments online, on social media, hit so hard and cut so deep for these young people. And for David Mulek, the 16-year-old Alamo Heights student, it was so horrible that he took his own life in January of last year. Since then, there's been an awareness campaign here locally trying to change the culture of cyberbullying, but is a state law also needed to try to protect people from this type of online abuse and harassment? David's law has been proposed in the current Texas legislature. It would require school districts to investigate and take action when cyberbullying is happened. So we're talking about that this afternoon, and we'd like to hear from the listeners about your experience and concerns about cyberbullying. What is it? Has it happened to you or someone that you love? How did you deal with it? We're joined this afternoon by Matt Mulek, co-founder of David's Legacy Foundation and David's father. Also with us online from the studios of KUT in Austin, State Representative Ina Mijares. She is District 124, and State Senator Jose Menendez from District 26, both representing San Antonio, both Democrats, both have filed a bill for David's law. A little bit later on, we'll be hearing from the Electronic Frontier Foundation about another view of this type of legislation. But welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Matt Mulek, tell me about David.
David is my youngest son. He's 16 years old. He was he loved sports. He loved the Spurs. He loved fantasy football. He knew every NFL, every NBA player. He was a Boy Scout, an Eagle Scout. He liked to play basketball. He was just an ordinary kid. He was did have a sensitive side. He would always want to adopt a pet or adopt a Haitian child. He had a lot of empathy and always wanted to make people feel good about themselves. And I think that is part of what made him a target.
So that he was sensitive, that he would have been vulnerable, and that was something that fellow students picked up on and they zero in on him. What kind of attacks did they do with him online?
Well, there was some exclusion, and there was some physical bullying, but the main attack on him was an Instagram where a classmate posted a picture of David's girlfriend, and I think there was a lot of jealousy involved, and other kids jumped on, and there were talking about his looks and insults and there were threats and it just went on and on, and there was hundreds of posts against him and it just made him feel like he was hated by everyone, and those attacks hurt him, but also attacks on his girlfriend, those hurt him even worse, and after that he was really never the same, even after that, it didn't stop. Even though we changed schools and took some of the phone away for a while or disconnected from some of those sites, he would still get texts and screenshots of postings of people talking about him or his girlfriend.
And I mean, he was a good-looking young lad. I don't understand. They were making fun of his looks. It's just they'll attack anything. It doesn't matter if it's even, there's nothing there, but still they're going to go after it.
He was a very, very handsome boy. And in his mind, they kept comparing him to monkey, to ape, and it just kept going on and on and on to the point where he didn't want to look in the mirror, and he was mad at my wife and I for creating him because he thought he looked like a monkey, even though it was just
that was just something that was created and put into his incepted into him, which is...
It was.
And when did you realize that this was serious?
The night of that cyber attack. It, I don't know how long it had gone on, but he came in, into our room at about 11 o'clock, and he was just devastated. And we tried to console him, and we got some screenshots, and but a lot of these postings were removed once they were put on there, so we still don't have a full transcript of what all was said. But that was the that was when we knew how serious it was. We took those to the school, and when we're at school, we heard of some other incidents where there were some movies that were taking and some texts and group texts and other some after school, which is another social media site, had been used, and so we heard that it had been going on for a little bit, but the significant event was that Instagram.
The school officials, how did they deal with it?
The school, because he was threatened, and he didn't want to go to school, he was afraid. They put him into one of the principal's office, and he was isolated there for a few days, trying to figure out what exactly to do with them. We gave him the screenshots, but since it happened off campus, the school was really reluctant to do anything there, and because of privacy laws that are in place, we don't really know what was done. He was moved to an alternative school, and was once he was there, we worked on getting him enrolled in a private school that was mid-semester, but we were able to do that, and we moved him to San Antonio Christian School.
But these things can follow you from school to school.
And they did. He still had the same girlfriend, and so there, yeah. These they took images of him and did posts, and it just it continued. Sure.
Well, so the issue is schools, and whether or not the school district could actually do anything about it. And they basically told you that their hands were tied. So, Representative Mijares, you filed legislation trying to what empower schools to take action.
Yes. That is one of the main focal points of our bill. In talking with teachers and talking with superintendents and school counselors and getting their input, one of the things we're hoping to do with this bill is to enable them to set their own school policies regarding cyberbullying. And in addition, to investigate cyberbullying that happened outside of school hours. So this enables schools to get involved. If you think about it, our children are in the care and custody of schools at the majority of the day. So schools should have definitely have a handle on what's going on.
All right, so our phone lines are open if you have a question or a comment as we talk about David's law, David's story, how a new law could change things for school districts, whether or not they would be able to put a stop to this online harassment. If you've got a story to tell us about you and your loved one, we'd love to hear that as well, and how you dealt with this, how this impacted you. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after a one-minute break. Stick with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Activists and lawmakers from here in San Antonio hope that the tragic suicide of a 16-year-old Alamo Heights student who allegedly killed himself due to the impact of online cyberbullying will prompt school districts to do more to deal with this growing problem. We're talking about cyberbullying and David's Law that's being proposed, named after David Mulock, who was subjected to mercilessly this bullying that was relentless, and how this happened on social media sites and how difficult it is to try to contain this in this new scary time. We're joined by Jose Menendez, State Senator for District 26, and Ina Mijares. She is a state representative from District 124, and also with us is Matt Mulock. He's the co-founder of David's Legacy Foundation and the father of David. And so, Senator Menendez, talk about the law. What does the law propose, and how would it work?
Well, thank you, first of all, for having us. And before I go any further, I think I need to thank both Matt Molak and the Molak family, because it was just a couple of weeks after the tragic events that occurred that took David's life that he called and to be a part of this. Representative Minhaides and I were already working on this because of another tragic case in another high school, and they took their tragedy and they've turned it into something to help prevent this from taking other children's lives. And so I think that's critically important, because this is an epidemic, and it's not just here in Texas but across the nation. So to the guts of what the bill is trying to accomplish, we're asking school districts to include cyberbullying policies in their district policies, and we want them to notify parents if their child has been the victim of a bully or is the alleged aggressor. We're requiring them to develop an anonymous reporting system for bullying and threats. One of the things that really frustrated me is when I heard Maureen and Matt talk about students, some of David's friends say, we knew what was happening, but we just didn't know what to do. We were told not to get involved. And to me, that just makes me so angry to hear how there were people trying to keep them from getting engaged in creating a solution. We also want school districts to give them the ability to investigate any bullying, whether it's off campus, if it materially affects the school environment, and it will allow them to collaborate with law enforcement on investigations, and it's going to give school districts greater latitude to place students in a disciplinary alternative education program or expel them for very serious bullying behavior, such as coercing someone into committing or attempting to commit suicide. If you think about it, I think it's a tragedy that the school district, one of their solutions was to put David, who was being the victim, into alternative school. That's just ridiculous. That's not the way it should be working. Also, I think we need to make it a misdemeanor to electronic harass or bully anyone under the age of 18 through text messages, social media websites, apps, or other means. And so we've got a lot of things here in the bill, and you know, we're trying to focus on giving more counseling and rehabilitation both to the victim and the aggressor. The purpose of this law is not to create a pipeline of school to jail. The purpose of this law is to try to prevent and to stop cyberbullying to the degree that's possible. And so that's what I think what, you know, my friend and colleague, Representative Minhaides, my state rep, she's been someone who has, as a lawyer, been very helpful in helping us craft something that doesn't look for scapegoats, but looks to really solve and address an issue in a way that makes a difference.
So, Representative Minhaides, let's talk about how widespread this problem is. We heard about David's story, tragic story, but is it an uncommon story?
We have an epidemic in this country, specifically in the state of Texas. Recently, another young student committed suicide. Her name was Brandy Vela. She was from Texas City, Texas. Shot herself in front of her family because she had been a victim of relentless cyberbullying. This is going on. I think the media now has been showing the country the different young people who have committed suicide as a result of cyberbullying. So this has been a problem for some time, and it's only getting worse. And it's our responsibility to do something to address the issue.
And, of course, measuring it through these tragic suicides is one thing, but what about the extent for students who just stop going to school, or students who will do other activities, cutting or whatever else, you know, self-harm in other ways in order to deal with the cyberbullying? We know that that's out there as well.
It is out there, and that's why we need to make sure that we, number one, we don't place the blame on the victim. I think one of the things that I've constantly heard is, well, take the smartphone or take the computer away from the victim and shield them from the problem. No, we need to address what's going on because, number one, that's not realistic. We need to deal with the aggressor and why are they reacting and acting in that manner. If we don't deal with the problem head on and deal with why the aggressor is acting in that manner and they keep getting passes, it gets worse. So, you know, we really need to look at our young people and prevent this from taking their lives or even creating worse problems for them in the future.
You know, to follow up on that, David, we have scientific knowledge that people who end up being violent criminals start typically by abusing animals, and then they move on to abusing people, and then they go move on to other events. What I think could the other benefit from this law could be that we could find what's wrong, what's causing this person to become a bully, an aggressor, and address their problems as well. Because before, right now, it could be just cyberbullying, you know, a student that they see as a for whatever reason, someone that they can push around. But, you know, later on in life, we're going to be dealing, if we don't deal with this bully now, in the criminal justice system, after they've beat up a spouse, a girlfriend, et cetera. So we need to address these issues now in order to prevent further crime down the road.
I'm going to take some phone calls. Got a lot of callers here who want to participate in our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Felicia is on the line. And Felicia, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. First of all, I want to say thank you for what you're doing. It's a wonderful thing, and I'm just so proud that someone is finally doing something. My daughter's 22, but when she was 11, that's, you know, 11 years ago, she was bullied on Facebook, and Facebook was new to me, new to her, and things were written similar fashion to what David had to go through. You know, you're ugly, you should kill yourself. You know, you don't have any reason to live. And as an 11-year-old, she didn't know how to handle that. But what I had done is I had given her, I said, look, you have permission to go on Facebook, but you need to allow me to read what you're writing and what people are sending you so that I can keep you safe. And we had a relationship close enough that she would allow me to do that. And that's when I read all of these horrific things. I went to the school. They said they could do nothing about it because it happened outside of school. And I said, but I know who the young lady is at school. Well, you know, it's not our concern. We can't do anything. And so what I did was I went to the school and just walked around with my daughter and walked with her through the hallways to keep her safe. I would take off work.
And did that aggravate the situation? It seems like that would pick, you
no.
know.
No, it didn't aggravate. These were 11 and 12-year-olds. And, I mean, the fact that a 12-year-old is writing things like, you know, you should kill yourself, you're not worthy of living, they're safe behind a computer. Nobody can see them. But when I went to the school, I just walked my daughter, I walked her to class, and I let this young lady know that I was her mother out loud, you know, bye, Raven. She said, bye, Mom. Okay, I'll talk to you later. And I would just stay in the hallway and just be present. But I had to do that because I didn't get any help. And I really monitored what went on the computer for a long time, even up till my daughter's 22 now, even up to last year.
Felicia,
and people share things with me.
Thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Great story. Thanks for your intervention there, and I'm glad that worked out for you. Leonard has called in, and Leonard, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for having me. First of all, I just wanted to publicly thank Representative Menjadez and Senator Menendez for all their hard work. And to, you know, anybody listening, these are real-life superheroes, and we want to thank them. The Molak family, my deepest sympathy, and the Vasquez family, thank you so much for all you all's hard work. Again, my name is Leonard Benya. I'm representing the San Antonio Bully Free campaign, founded by Epi Quiroga. His brother is Robert Piquin Quiroga, the first world champion boxer here in San Antonio, the first world champion in the United States to win that title in his weight class. And he also changed boxing history by banning six-ounce gloves throughout the world. So he was a significant part of boxing and San Antonio. And he was murdered by his middle school bully 11 years ago. So Epi, and to honor his brother, started this campaign, and so far we've been to several schools in San Antonio, Natalia, the entire, all the schools in Natalia, missions, baseball games, company picnics, and we've had young people, parents, and community members take an oath to stop bullying, and right now we're at about 10,000 oaths that we've given out. So we've working real hard. We just want to let the community know that we're out. We're here. Epi has a story to tell, and we have some tips and information to give out to young people and family members and community members to stop bullying. But one thing that's unique about our program, though, is that we don't only go into the school and then that's it. We actually go back, have a focus group, come up with ideas from the students themselves, and actually have them develop and create their own anti-bully effort within the school. So basically it's a kind of, we teach them to make their own little nonprofit, I guess, okay, for lack of a better term.
Leonard, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Good information. I'm going to look that up and learn more about that. But let me ask you, Matt Moloch, so that was one essay, Bully Free, was one campaign. Your foundation, named after David, is also a public awareness campaign. So are you saying, you know that a law is a law, but there's nothing better than actually changing the culture?
Oh, absolutely. The law is necessary. It's gonna set the framework, and it's gonna provide the tools for schools to be involved and to do something about this. But to really make an impact on this issue, it's going to take a change of heart, and it's gonna be from the kids and those that are listening in and not weighing in. They're the bystanders. Those if they get to the point where they have the moral courage to turn into upstanders by saying this is enough, we don't tolerate this, and they take up for that person. That's when we know we've had success.
But somehow kids gain social currency by becoming the attacker, and it becomes like a game, a video game for them, without actually realizing that they're hurting real individuals. And how do we make that breakthrough to show these kids that this is not a game?
Yeah, it's school policy, it's awareness, it's training, character development, cyber citizenship training, starting at an early age. What's made this more dangerous is the using their phones or their computers to communicate have made the cowards more bold, and individuals that may not say those same things face to face or become different people when they're behind that phone and anonymous.
Right. So taking away anonymity from people, there's also the issue that many of these people who are participating in this are juveniles. There's a lot of questions about freedom of speech issues as well, and how much responsibility and what kind of resources school districts have in trying to become the cop on the beat of social media. There's a lot of issues to continue to explore and flesh out and figure out how this law would work and how we can prevent more suicides from cyberbullying from happening. So we're going to go into our second half hour when we take this quick break, but our phone lines are still open. We've got some slots open. We'll hear from some more callers. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. After being mercilessly bullied, cyberbullied by his fellow students at Alamo Heights High School, 16-year-old David Moloch took his own life on January 4th, 2016. A district attorney's office investigation into the online harassment of David said there was not enough evidence there to file criminal charges. But since then, Senate Bill 179 was filed in the current legislative session that would force school districts to take action to stop cyberbullying. That bill is also being called David's Law, named after David Moloch. We're talking about that law, how it would be rolled out, how it could impact students and school districts, whether or not it would actually have an impact on curtailing cyberbullying, and what about the rights of online speech? We're now bringing into the conversation Adam Schwartz. He is the senior staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And so, Adam, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here, sir.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm sure you're very sympathetic to what happened with David and other people who have fallen victim to cyberbullying. But what are your concerns about legislation trying to curtail it?
Yeah, I just want to be very clear out of the gate that cyberbullying and online harassment are serious problems, and real people suffer from it. And at EFF, we have the highest respect for the intentions of this kind of legislation and for the supporters of this kind of legislation. But what we have is a fear of unintended consequences, that in our efforts to pass laws that will protect kids from bullying, what actually will end up happening is that kids will be suffering from more punishment, school expulsions, imprisonment, and that it's going to be all too often the most vulnerable kids who suffer this kind of disproportionate application of new punishments like the ones that are provided for in this bill.
What do you mean the most vulnerable? So the low income?
What I mean is that, for example, the bill provides that harassment that can be punished by the school includes sending an email where one student infringes on the rights of another student at school. And that's, from our perspective, textbook vague language that we can't anticipate how school officials across the state are going to enforce it. So there are vice principals for discipline who are hardworking and in good faith, but just have a crush of work on their desks. And when you look at actual escalations of conflict between children, it can be difficult to figure out, who started it and what the communication means. And we think that officials may make snap judgments about who is the bad guy. You know, was it the kid who was beat up out of school? Or was it that kid who sent a retaliatory email about the person who beat him up? We think that busy, hardworking, but overworked school officials may make incorrect judgments about who is intruding on whose rights. So we think that this law can have unintended consequences.
Well, let me get a response to that from State Representative Ina Mijares from District 124 here in San Antonio.
You know, I can understand, of course, there's always a concern for unintended consequences on a new law. Now, what we have here is I want to stress there's flexibility in this law. It gives school administrators, teachers, counselors the flexibility to set their own policies. Again, they are trained in this area on how to deal with children in situations such as these. But most importantly, it doesn't require expulsion. They may expel a student, but there again, they have the ability to set their own policies and their own investigative process. But I have, I do believe that they will set the correct policies and they will make proper decisions. But again, it's not requiring expulsion. It's may expel a kid. But I would also pass this to Senator Menendez.
Well, we've been also sensitive to the potential for what we've heard. And so in response to the question about it being vague or not, we've been working closely with school discipline academic additions to narrowly tailor the definition. So sometimes I've heard that someone says cyberbullying in the bill is vague and the overbroad definition of the term could include too many things. So what we decided to do is that bullying is defined as a single significant or pattern of acts that exploits the imbalance of power. And so exploiting an imbalance of power is key in this context, and it's widely accepted as a standard bearer for bullying policies in schools across the country. So beyond exploiting an imbalance of power, the bill actually says that bullying must negatively harm the student in one of four ways: physically harming or substantially causing negative mental effects, creating an intimidating, threatening, or abusive educational environment for the student, materially and substantially disrupting the educational process, and infringing on the rights of the victim at school. We are hypersensitive to creating a bill that is not a knee-jerk reaction, but something that actually will stand up to muster in the courtroom and will actually accomplish something.
Let me go to the caller with L.A. And L.A., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your program. I just want to ask, were the students that caused the death of David, were they identified and were they prosecuted? If they were prosecuted, what was their prosecution?
All right, L.A., thank you for your question. So let me go over to Matt Mullock, father of David, and what happened to the students who allegedly bullied him to the point of suicide?
Like I said, we are not aware of anything that the school did to the individual.
But we know who they were,
because
right?
Because of privacy issues. We did, and we're able to find out who they were, even though there were screen names, but there were dozens of kids involved, but we were able to find out who they were. There was no criminal prosecution.
And but so you knew the screen names, so they had like online identities, and then just by asking around, you're able to figure out who these individuals were.
Right.
So that brings up the context of privacy rights for everyone involved in this situation. And so Adam Schwartz over at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is that a concern?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a moment ago about the harassment bullying provision, but there is another provision of this bill which is of concern to us, which is styled as subpoenas for pre-suit discovery of the identity of people and other things in investigating a claim involving injury to minors. When we look at this provision at the EFF, what this looks like to us is an effort to make it easier to unmask anonymous speakers on the internet. And the view of the EFF is that it is much more common for vulnerable people to be able to take advantage of anonymous speech than for perpetrators of harassment against victims to be taking advantage of anonymous speech. You know, this goes back to the founders of our country who argued in favor of, you know, freedom from England, speaking anonymously. And from that time forward, there's been a great American tradition of respecting a right to communicate anonymously, especially for people who come from unpopular groups or who express unpopular messages, who might be chilled and deterred from doing so if they were scared that the controversial thing they're about to say in a website that's read by their fellow students puts them at risk of being unmasked and subjected to ostracism or bullying if people find out what they're saying. So we are troubled by this aspect of the bill as well.
But we know there are limits to those freedoms. Supreme Court says you can't yell fire in a crowded theater because that freedom, exercising your freedom of speech, could have devastating consequences. Reaction to that?
David, maybe we respond to that one?
Yes, sir. It's going to you next.
I'm so sorry. I was just going to bring up the fact is that the anonymous accounts tend to be the most abusive and the most dangerous ones going towards the students. It was an anonymous bully that brought this to my attention when Representative Mijares brought the Vasquez family. Mr. Leo Vasquez came to us with the principal of his school and a law enforcement officer because their son, Matt Vasquez, who had leukemia, was being encouraged to kill himself. He was being told that he was a mistake, that he should shoot himself would be too quick, but hanging would be too cliche. I suggest tying a boulder around your leg. I pray every morning and night that the cancer comes back and kill you. The principal in law enforcement, we need to know who these people are so that we can have a conversation with them and say, why are you doing this? So this is the only way we're going to get to the bottom of this. And the interesting thing is, I mean, I don't have a problem with anybody saying anything anonymously about me as an elected official, as a person. I'm an adult. I can handle it. This bill is directed at protecting minors. And that's why I think, just like you said, we have limitations on freedom of speech, you know, yelling fire. We need to protect our minor students whose brains aren't fully developed and they're not able to handle the relentless anonymous. These websites were put on using pictures of him when he was at his worst, when he was bald, when he was looking bad, and telling himself that he was a mistake from God. And they were called Matt's Shiny Head was one of them. The other one, The Cold Effing Truth. And then these manifestos about Matt is ugly on how he needs to. And then every time he'd make fun of the fact that even though the application would shut one site down, he said, yes, it's me. I'm the same person who made the past two accounts. You keep suspending my account, I only come back stronger. And so this is why we should have the right to have a conversation, because let me tell you, if a police officer came to my door and said, someone at this home is using a computer to make these horrific accounts, I would be having a conversation with all three of my kids, and we'd get to the bottom of it.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. We'll take some calls from Gabriel, Linda, Kyle. You're all in the queue. We'll be getting to your calls coming up, and we'll also talk more about online cyber bullying, the real world impact of whether or not a law, David's law, how it would be rolled out. Could it actually prevent this terrible epidemic that we have here? The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join the conversation. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Cyberbullying is part of our plugged-in, interconnected society, but is a necessary part of it. Is there something we can do to get rid of this online harassment? It's not just harmless jabs that are so easily ignored. They have real consequences. We saw that in January of 2016 when David Mulick took his own life. He was relentlessly cyberbullied by fellow students at Alamo Heights High School. But can a new law, David's Law, now proposed in the legislature, help stop cyberbullying in its tracks? We're talking about that this afternoon. Let's get a caller in on the conversation, Gabriel. And Gabriel, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'd just like to give a little background real quick. I graduated high school back in 2011. Cyberbullying was becoming an issue, but we were not educated very often on it. With that being said, and David's law being, if it were to be passed, my question is, where would the funding come from in order to monitor all what the students are doing and to have these assemblies in order to educate, you know, the kids of what's going on and how to prevent it and to stop doing it?
Okay.
And also with our schools, you know, already being poorly funded, what will we do to prevent teachers losing their job in order to get this across?
All right, Gabriel, thank you so much for your call. So, Representative Minhades, how would this be paid for?
In our due diligence of preparing this particular bill, I believe there is no fiscal note, so there's no additional funding that would be needed. These are policies that will be created with the school districts, but again, there's no foreseeable money that's going to be needed for funding for the education part of this.
It's a full-time job just trying to keep bullying from happening on campus. If a person's going to be required to monitor online social media for the entire student body, you don't think that's a big thing to do? Let me ask you about that, Matt Mulick.
Well, the schools aren't going to be asked to sit and monitor conversations of kids. What they're going to do is if an incident is reported to them, they're going to be able to look into it because, Representative Minhades said, these kids spend 8 hours a day at school, and then there's extracurriculars. They spend the most of their life, most of waking hours there at school or school time activity with their peers. So that's the center of gravity for all of this. It's not going to be any more burdensome on schools to look into this than it is some other, throwing an eraser in class or cheating on a test or whatever. It's just it's going to take some looking at screenshots, calling a couple of kids in and talking to them.
All right. Let me ask you, Adam Schwartz at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, do you see this bill as workable?
The provisions that we've spoken about before, about new powers of schools to discipline and expel students, new powers of prosecutors to prosecute youths, the unmasking of anonymous speakers, we think are very problematic. I do want to emphasize that there are approaches to the problem that we think don't raise these issues, that don't endanger vulnerable kids, that don't violate free speech. So like the caller mentioned, curriculum in the schools to teach all students about the importance of respect and not bullying and respecting diversity can make a huge difference. And counseling services for bullies, tragically a lot of bullies themselves are suffering domestic violence at home or bullying on the playground, or if they're bullying kids who are gay, maybe they themselves are struggling with their own sexual identity. And so counseling services can make a big difference. Peer-to-peer reconciliation services, adults being involved as opposed to being overworked and not having the time to attend to escalating conflicts among students. There's all kinds of things that we can do to stop bullying that don't raise the kind of free speech concerns that EFF is objecting to in this legislation.
Another caller with Melody. Melody, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I want to thank Representative Minjarez and Senator Menendez for their wonderful work, and the Mohawk family. I'm deeply saddened for your tragedy. I know I've spoken to Senator Menendez and Representative Minjarez on a private level on this one. I'm a former high school teacher here in San Antonio. I taught for a little over 5 years, and I unfortunately have been in on some of the disciplinary actions and hearings for these children that are bullying. And when it came to the parents, I believe his name is Alex, that just spoke right now, brought up a very interesting point in that many of these children are being bullied at home. The language and rhetoric that would come from the parents in these hearings was just downright cruel. And so if we can get to the inner core of that onion skin model and change the dialogue that's going on from the beginning with parents and the society as a whole, I truly feel that many of these problems would not exist, or would at least not be as jarring as they are today.
All right, Melody, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. I'm going to go to another caller really quickly because we're short on time. Linda. Hi, Linda. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, and thank you. This is such an important topic, and I appreciate people taking it seriously and bringing it to this. I echo what Melody just said, and I'm also jumping ahead and thinking to consequences for the bullies. I hope that consequences will include not only some mentoring, maybe mentoring groups, but also service work. I know that just reaching out in service can change a life, bringing you from being self-directed to other-directed, and, you know, 200 hours of community service in a group of others doing the service. I just hope that they're not just thrown into the juvenile system, and there we have some more lost lives. I hope that they can be redirected, because obviously they must be really struggling if they are fipping, you know. Okay. Anyway, just a thought. I hope somebody's thinking about that.
All right, Linda, thank you for that. Matt Moloch over at Davis Legacy Foundation, y'all are taking action, not just looking for new laws, but you're also reaching out into schools, trying to help students become aware of these situations, help in social learning to realize the stuff that they're doing now online is going to follow them for the rest of their lives. You know, this is not just some little game they're playing now, but now their entire search history will be available. Not their search history, but, you know, what they've done online is something that could, you know, follow them for the rest of, as they go into careers and stuff.
Sure.
So is that something you bring up?
Well, what we've learned and have confirmed that this is a very complex issue. The legislation is absolutely necessary, but we have to raise awareness. We need to get parents to do better parenting. We need the peers to step up, and we need to let people know the severity of this issue. You know, the CDC came back with a report from using 2012 data that child suicide is now the number one cause of death. It's now ahead of traffic accidents, and that cyberbullying has had a big impact on that. And that's 2012, and we know it's gotten worse since then. And we've had 5 deaths that I'm aware of in the past year and a half. And for each of those, there are thousands of people that are suffering, and there's even the bystanders that have. They're going to have to live with that guilt. And we've heard from so many of them that they're struggling right now. And so we've got to do
something
about this.
With the guilt? They're struggling with the guilt?
Absolutely. For not knowing what to do, not stepping in, not trying to do something, reporting it, speaking up for that person that was getting targeted, It's damaging not just the victims, it's damaging other people as well. And the bullies, the instigators, I agree, they need some help. And the object of the law is not to send people to prison. We're not mandating any kind of punishment. These juvenile judges have a lot of discretion in what they can do. They can delay getting a driver's license. They can do community service in areas that might develop some empathy. There's a lot of things that can happen. In the foundation, yes, we're raising awareness. We funded some school programs. We have an action arm of the foundation is the DBM Project, where we have we provide pro bono attorney representation for individuals that are getting targeted, that are not getting anywhere with the schools. And we also have been recognizing kids for doing something about this problem.
And you're getting a lot of support across the community. Trish DeBerry is on your board.
Absolutely.
And she's providing some pro bono help with getting the message out.
Yes, Trish and her firm have been great and have helped guide us through. Like I said, we were not experts on this, and really, before this happened to David, we were just as ignorant about the severity of this issue as anybody else. And Trish is on board, and we have now have a retired school superintendent for one of the largest districts here in town. We have people in the tech right. community and a few lawyers. And
okay, I'm going to get Kyle on really quickly. Kyle, we're really short on time, but I promise you'd get on the air, so here you are. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My suggestion is this. Maybe the definition should not be bullying, but the definition should be cruelty.
All right, Kyle, thank you for that. And so so how is the bill coming along, Senator Menendez, real quick?
The bill is coming along very well. One of the things that is doing a lot of good for it is the incredible response that we're getting out of San Antonio and around the state. And in listening to the callers, I couldn't agree more with the last two or three callers. And the fact is that this is not, one bill is not going to legislate a complete change. But what it will do is it will implement a mechanism by which people can get involved to make a difference in the lives of other students in their schools. And so, you know, once one person's made it seem like we're going to ask someone to be monitoring social media, that's not the case. We're giving a mechanism for people to report this and for schools to get involved in the investigation once things have been reported. So things are going well because we've got great authors and Representative Mijares, and she's working hard on her side and we're working hard on our side. And this is something that we have to get done, but it's going to take everyone to help us get involved, and we need everyone to get involved and express their views
okay.
to the legislature.
We're out of time. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.